And after this, Joseph of Arimathea, being a disciple of Jesus, but secretly for fear of the Jews, besought Pilate that he might take away the body of Jesus. And Pilate gave him leave. He came therefore and took the body of Jesus. And there came also Nicodemus, who at the first came to Jesus by night and brought a mixture of myrrh and aloes, about 100 pound weight. Then took they the body of Jesus and wound it in linen clothes with the spices, as the manner of the Jews is to bury. Now in the place where he was crucified, there was a garden, and in the garden a new sepulcher, wherein never man yet laid. There laid they Jesus, and rolled a great stone to the door of the sepulcher, and departed. So ends Thomas Jefferson's redacted account of the Gospels of Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, which he entitled in 1820, The Life and Morals of Jesus of Nazareth, which is now more commonly called the Jefferson Bible, and was first published in 1902. Jefferson, in my understanding, didn't intend for this to be published. This is the doings of other people. But what a sad place to end. In fact, I wouldn't call that good news. That's not the end of the gospel. Jefferson rejected the miracles of Jesus and sought to extract what he deemed the pure principles which Jesus taught. He wrote that in a letter to John Adams, actually, on October 12th, 1813. So before he even finished this, he told John Adams that he was working on this project to extract the pure principles of what Jesus taught. And so for Jefferson, the value of Jesus was in his teaching and not in his supposed, alleged resurrection from the dead. He believed Jesus to be a real person of history and the greatest of all teachers, but nothing more. It's interesting that many have accepted the history of the gospel writers when they spoke about natural things, non-miraculous things. But when they spoke of the supernatural, that was rejected as legend, as myth. So, in this lesson, what I'm going to do is, using the Gospels, we are only going to look at the natural facts of the story of Jesus and his disciples and see if we can learn something about the validity of the supernatural. Okay? When I say only, maybe I should say primarily, we're going to just look at what I believe others would say, yeah, that happened, that was taught, and this is something that was taught. So, first of all, let's just begin with the claims of Jesus to being, first of all, the Son of God, deity. John chapter 5. In John chapter 5 and verse 16, it says, "For this reason, the Jews persecuted Jesus and sought to kill him because he had done these things on the Sabbath. But Jesus answered them, 'My Father has been working until now, and I have been working.' Therefore, the Jews sought all the more to kill him because he not only broke the Sabbath, but also said that God was his Father, making himself equal with God." So, first of all, under the Jews who don't like Jesus, when John uses the term the Jews, he's not usually meaning everybody who might call themselves a Jew. He's usually referring to the Jewish leadership. And the Jewish leadership certainly understood who Jesus was claiming to be, and thus they wanted to kill him. So, if you're a skeptic, whether or not you believe that Jesus was who he claimed to be, the historical record, the natural fact, is that this is what Jesus claimed. There's nothing miraculous about the claim. I could claim that. You wouldn't believe me, but I can claim it. Anybody can claim it. And so that's why I'm trying to point out, Jesus claimed it. And the Jews understood him to be claiming that. If Jesus wasn't claiming that, and they misunderstood him, he could have corrected that. He would have corrected that. But he doesn't correct that. And so they're the ones who draw the conclusion, naturally, that he is making this claim to be something more than you and I are. Certainly, most of the Jews of Jesus' day understood this. And like many today, rejected it. I'm not going to believe that. I'm not going to believe that. That's historical fact. Jesus made this claim and people rejected it. Okay? If the Jews had just misunderstood, again, Jesus could have corrected them. But notice what he did instead. Verse 19. And then Jesus answered and said to them, "Most assuredly, I say to you, the Son of God can do nothing of himself but what he sees the Father doing. For whatever he does, the Son also does in like manner. For the Father loves the Son and shows him all things that he himself does, and he will show him greater works than these, that you may marvel. For as the Father raises the dead and gives life to them, even so the Son gives life to whom he will. For the Father judges no one, but has committed all judgment to the Son, that all should honor the Son just as they honor the Father. He who does not honor the Son does not honor the Father who sent him. Most assuredly, I say to you, he who hears my word and believes in him who sent me has everlasting life and shall not come into judgment, but has passed from death into life. Most assuredly, I say to you, the hour is coming and now is, when the dead will hear the voice of the Son of God, and those who hear will live. For as the Father has life in himself, so he has granted the Son to have life in himself, and has given him authority to execute judgment, also because he is the Son of Man. Do not marvel at this, for the hour is coming in which all who are in the graves will hear his voice and come forth, those who've done good to the resurrection of life, and those who have done evil to the resurrection of condemnation. I can of myself do nothing. As I hear, I judge, and my judgment is righteous because I do not seek my own will, but the will of the Father who sent me." He doesn't correct their misunderstanding. He doubles down. He continues to refer to himself as the Son of the Father in heaven. He claims to have been revealed all things. He claims that he has the power to raise the dead. He claims that he has the authority of a judge. He claims the honor that the Father has. He claims to have been sent from the Father. Now, some people who share Jefferson's skepticism will claim that Jesus never really said these things. Yet notice how Jefferson described Jesus in a personal letter. This is Jefferson's words about Jesus. In a letter to Peter Carr, we don't know who that is, August 10th, 1787. This is how he describes Jesus: as a man of illegitimate birth, of a benevolent heart, enthusiastic mind, who set out without pretensions to divinity, ended in believing them, and was punished capitally for sedition. You see what he said? Jefferson affirmed his belief that Jesus didn't set out to be considered the Son of God, but ended up believing that he was the Son of God. So while there are many today who will say, yeah, Jesus never said these things that we just read here, the reason, their motive for saying that isn't because there's any evidence to the contrary. It's that they want to accept Jesus as a good moral teacher, but if he said these things, then that would make him more than just a teacher, a great moral teacher. That would make him making supernatural claims. Okay, so understand that. You might say, well, wait a minute, you're reading here. I thought you said you're going to not read about the supernatural. I'm not going to read about supernatural events. I'm reading about what could be said by anybody And Jesus said these things. And Jefferson agreed that Jesus said these things. And like the Jews of Jesus' day, Jefferson didn't believe Jesus' claim to divinity. But he did believe Jesus ended his life believing these things about himself. The record of Jesus' life and claims is ancient and well documented, and it is simply a bias by modern people today against the supernatural that causes one to ignore the testimony of John's eyewitness. Because remember, the one who's writing this claims to be an eyewitness of these things. This is the John of Peter, Andrew, James, and John, the apostles of Jesus Christ. He claims to have been a witness of these things. He heard these things spoken by Jesus with his own ears, and he is recording them for us. And a lot of people say, no, it never happened. On what basis, though? Simply a bias against the supernatural. Now, go to John chapter 10. In John chapter 10 and verse 27, this is Jesus speaking again, of course. My sheep hear my voice, and I know them, and they follow me. And I give them eternal life, and they shall never perish. Neither shall anyone snatch them out of my hand. My Father, who has given them to me, is greater than all, and no one is able to snatch them out of my Father's hand. I and my Father are one. The Jews took up stones again to stone him. Jesus answered them, many good works I have shown you from my Father. For which of these works do you stone me? The Jews answered him, saying, for a good work we do not stone you, but for blasphemy, and because you, being a man, make yourself God. You see that? The history record affirms that Jesus claimed to be divine, sent from the Father, and that is true regardless of whether or not you believe Jesus' claim is true. Whether or not you believe what he said was true, if say you're a skeptic and you don't, Jesus did say these things, okay? And in addition to this relationship with the Father, Jesus also claimed that he would rise from the dead. In John chapter 2, John chapter 2, beginning with verse 13. Now the Passover of the Jews was at hand, and Jesus went up to Jerusalem. And he found in the temple those who sold oxen and sheep and doves, and the money changers doing business. And when he had made a whip of cords, he drove them all out of the temple with the sheep and the oxen, and poured out the changers' money and overturned the tables. And he said to those who sold doves, take these things away. Do not make my Father's house a house of merchandise. Then his disciples remembered that it was written, zeal for your house has eaten me up. So the Jews answered and said to him, what sign do you show us since you do these things? Jesus answered and said to them, destroy this temple, and in 3 days I will raise it up. So here, very near the beginning of his teaching, he goes into one of his temple cleansings, and they say, we want to know by what authority you just did what you did. And Jesus basically just says, you destroy this temple, and in 3 days I will raise it up. Now, he says, verse 21, he was speaking of the temple of his body. Therefore, when he had risen from the dead, his disciples remembered that he had said this to them, and they believed the scripture and the word which Jesus had said. I said I wasn't going to read anything that made a supernatural claim, and I just goofed. I did. But I wanted you to understand that that is what the disciples remembered later. Okay? So again, strike verse 22 from the record there. Jesus made the claim that if they killed him, on the third day he would rise up. Matthew 17. Matthew chapter 17, verse 22. It says, now while they were staying in Galilee, Jesus said to them, the Son of Man is about to be betrayed into the hands of men, and they will kill him, and the third day he will be raised up. And they were exceedingly sorrowful. Okay? Jesus taught this to his disciples in Galilee. That's where that took place. Go over to chapter 20 and verse 17. Then Jesus, going up to Jerusalem, took the 12 disciples aside on the road and said to them, "Behold, we are going up to Jerusalem, and the Son of Man will be betrayed to the chief priests and to the scribes, and they will condemn him to death and deliver him to the Gentiles to mock and to scourge and to crucify, and the third day he will rise again." So now he's on his way to Jerusalem, and he tells his disciples the same thing. He makes the prediction that he will be killed, but he will rise again on the third day. Then go to chapter 26 and verses 31 and 32. Then Jesus said to them, "All of you will be made to stumble because of me this night, for it is written, 'I will strike the shepherd and the sheep of the flock will be scattered.' But after I have been raised, I will go before you to Galilee." So this is the night of his betrayal. He is going to be crucified the next day. And he is telling them that he will rise again from the dead, as he'd already told them numerous times. So again, this historical record tells us that this is what Jesus taught. Just as surely as he taught the Sermon on the Mount, which most people, Christian or not Christian, admire and see great wisdom in, and that's why they call Jesus a great teacher. Yes, he taught those things in the Sermon on the Mount, but he taught this as well. So whether you believe Jesus was raised or not, he said he would rise from the dead. So, that's what Jesus claimed. Now let's consider the reaction behavior of Jesus' disciples. First, before his death, before Jesus was crucified. As we've already noted, the apostles have been told several times by Jesus that he was going to die and rise again. Go back to Matthew chapter 16. In Matthew chapter 16, we'll begin reading at verse 21. It says, "From that time, Jesus began to show to his disciples that he must go to Jerusalem and suffer many things from the elders and chief priests and scribes and be killed and be raised again the third day. Peter took him aside and began to rebuke him, saying, 'Far be it from you, Lord. This shall not happen to you.' But he turned and said to Peter, 'Get behind me, Satan. You are an offense to me, for you are not mindful of the things of God, but of the things of men.'" The reaction of Peter was that Jesus' teaching was crazy. Impossible today. They would say, "No way, that can't happen. That's not going to happen to you." And then when Jesus was betrayed, go to Matthew chapter 26 and verse 55. "In that hour, Jesus said to the multitudes, 'Have you come out as against a robber with swords and clubs to take me? I sat daily with you teaching in the temple and you did not seize me. But all this was done that the scriptures of the prophets might be fulfilled.' And then all the disciples forsook him and fled." All the disciples forsook Jesus and fled. Though we're told in verse 58 that Peter followed at a distance. And then jump on down to verse 69. "Now Peter sat outside in the courtyard, and a servant girl came to him saying, 'You also were with Jesus of Galilee.' But he denied it before them all, saying, 'I do not know what you're saying.' And when he had gone out of the gateway, another girl saw him and said to those who were there, 'This fellow also was with Jesus of Nazareth.' But again, he denied it with an oath, 'I do not know the man.' And after a while, those who stood by came to him and said to Peter, 'Surely you also are one of them, because your speech betrays you.' And he began to curse and swear, saying, 'I do not know the man.' Immediately, a rooster crowed. And Peter remembered the word of Jesus who had said to him, 'Before the rooster crows, you will deny me three times.' And then he went out and wept bitterly." Peter denies Jesus three times, just like Jesus said he would. Now, you can disregard the prediction and the fulfillment if you like. If you're a skeptic and you're like, "Yeah, I just don't think what Jesus would have predicted that." But here's what I'm looking for. Peter's reaction to the idea of Jesus being crucified was negative. We already saw that. And when pressed about whether he was in a relationship with this Jesus, whether he was one who knew that, denied it. That's all natural. That's all historical. He denied it. So that's the way the apostles reacted to Jesus' predictions of his death and resurrection before he was crucified. Now let's look at how they reacted after he was crucified. Go to Luke chapter 24. In verse 9. Then they returned from the tomb, and that's the women who had initially gone there, and told all these things to the 11 and to all the rest. It was Mary Magdalene, Joanna, Mary the mother of James, and the other women with them who told these things to the apostles. And their words seemed to them like idle tales, and they did not believe them. So some of the women claimed that Jesus had risen from the dead. That was their claim. But their words seemed as nonsense to Jesus' own apostles. Isn't that what many skeptics today would say? That's nonsense. There are many today who would agree with that assessment of Jesus' apostles. Okay, so this is all completely naturalistic here. There's a claim by these women that he's been raised from the dead. Yes, that's a supernatural claim, but anybody can make a supernatural claim. And that's what they're claiming. And that just seemed like nonsense to them. It's just interesting to me that that's what people today say. That seems like nonsense. Then if you jump on down to verse 18. Then the one whose name was Cleopas answered and said to him, "Are you the only stranger in Jerusalem? Have you not known the things which happened there in these days?" And Jesus said to them, "What things?" And they said to him, "The things concerning Jesus of Nazareth, who was a prophet, mighty in deed and word before God and all the people, and how the chief priests and our rulers delivered him to be condemned to death and crucified him. But we were hoping that it was he who was going to redeem Israel. Indeed, besides all this, today is the third day since these things happened. Yes, and certain women of our company who arrived at the tomb early astonished us. And when they did not find his body, they came saying that they had also seen a vision of angels who said he was alive. And certain of those who were with us went to the tomb and found it just as the women had said, but him they did not see." Now I realize, again, I stumbled a little bit there because I have Jesus speaking to these two, and I said I wasn't going to look at passages that implied the supernatural. Well, if he's alive after a crucifixion, then that would do that. But the reason I'm interested in this passage is not because Jesus is involved, not at least not for the purposes of this lesson. But this is a further testimony to the fact that women had testified to the fact that the tomb was empty on the third day. And that's completely naturalistic. If you want to disregard the fact that these two men were actually talking to Jesus, you can do that. But the rumor was going around. The word was getting spread around. The tomb is empty. Resurrection claims are generally unbelievable, right? Wouldn't we have the same reaction if someone were today to claim that the grave is empty? The tomb is empty of somebody that we all know had died? Yeah, that's generally not believable, right? But claims can be made by anybody. So go to Matthew then. Go then to Matthew chapter 28. Matthew chapter 28 and verse 11. It says, "Now while they were going, behold, some of the guard came into the city and reported to the chief priests all the things that had happened. When they had assembled with the elders and taken counsel, they gave a large sum of money to the soldiers, saying, 'Tell them his disciples came at night and stole him away while he slept. And if this comes to the governor's ears, we will appease him and make you secure.' So they took the money and did as they were instructed. And this saying is commonly reported among the Jews until this day." The stealing of the body of Jesus is mentioned here as one naturalistic explanation for what really happened. Okay. Now, as it's presented, admittedly, here in the scriptures, it's all presented as a cover-up of what really happened. But this was a commonly accepted explanation for why the tomb was empty. Interesting historical fact. Even the enemies of Jesus didn't deny that the tomb was empty. That where Jesus had been buried and where they had placed a guard and a seal on the tomb was empty. The enemies of Jesus acknowledged that it was empty. The soldiers who guarded it acknowledged that the tomb was empty. Now, there can be any of a number of explanations of how it was made empty, naturalistically. But it is a fact of history that the tomb of Jesus was empty on the third day. And it doesn't require subscribing to any supernatural theories to acknowledge that indeed the tomb was empty. Now, to all of those like Jefferson, who I quoted at the beginning of this lesson, that's it. This is where the story of Jesus must end. He was put in a tomb, and yeah, it ended up being empty, but we don't know how. And it's from that point, we're going to look at this naturalistically, remember, it's from that point that the very confused and unbelieving, skeptical, and cowardly disciples of Jesus decided to hatch a plan to proclaim that the missing Jesus, whose body is mysteriously gone from there, has risen from the dead. That's their plan. And thus, the teachings of the oft misunderstood rabbi from Nazareth, who thought he was the Son of God and thought he would overcome death, were spread by the very same men who were so disillusioned that he surrendered without a fight and abandoned them. Because that's what Jesus did, right? Remember? Peter was ready to fight. Jesus said, put your sword away. And he surrendered to them. And they crucified him. And so then they forsook him. That does not sound like the basis, the foundation of any movement that would shortly turn the world upside down. And has literally changed human history for the last 2,000 years. A bunch of cowards got together and said, let's instead preach that God raised him from the dead. Because that was going to get them what? Lots of money? Lots of power? Lots of position? Lots of notoriety? Comforts in life? I mean, what motivates people to lie? There's got to be some advantage. Especially when the lie is going to get you killed or persecuted at least. Go to Acts chapter 2. Acts chapter 2. Let's notice what they said, what they proclaimed. Verse 22, men of Israel, this is Peter, remember, the one who denied him three times when he was arrested, fled from him and abandoned him. 50 days later, men of Israel, hear these words, Jesus of Nazareth, a man attested by God to you by miracles, wonders, and signs which God did through him in your midst, as you yourselves also know, him being delivered by the determined counsel and foreknowledge of God, you've taken by lawless hands, have crucified and put to death, whom God raised up, having loosed the pains of death, because it was not possible that he should be held by it. What does Peter say? Well, look at his conclusion in verse 36. Therefore, let all the house of Israel know assuredly that God has made this Jesus, whom you crucified, both Lord and Christ. Peter, The one who had cowardly denied Jesus just a few weeks earlier in a much more private situation now was publicly charging thousands of Jews with conspiratorial murder. Something's changed in Peter. Something's changed in Peter. Chapter 3 and verse 13. The God of, this is Peter speaking again to a large group of people, the healing of the lame man. The God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, the God of our fathers, glorified his servant Jesus, whom you delivered up and denied in the presence of Pilate when he was determined to let him go. But you denied the Holy One and the just and asked for a murderer to be granted to you and killed the Prince of Life, whom God raised from the dead, of which we are witnesses. Peter and John continue to teach this. Go to chapter 4, verse 18. Chapter 4, verse 18. Now they're arrested. Peter and John are arrested, brought before the Sanhedrin, the council. And it says, they called them and commanded them not to speak at all or teach in the name of Jesus. They're threatening them. Peter and John answered and said to them, whether it is right in the sight of God to listen to you more than to God, you judge. For we cannot but speak the things which we have seen and heard. And then, in verse 19, Peter and John, oh no, that's what I had there, verse 19, yeah. And then verse 20, for we cannot but speak the things which we have seen and heard. Peter and John are arrested for their persistent teaching of Jesus. All the apostles on trial, we go to chapter 5, verses 27 through 32. Not take the time to read that right now. All the apostles are on trial and they're not going to quit preaching. What changed these confused and cowardly men into courageous proclaimers of Jesus Christ? Whom God raised up, he said in chapter 2 and verse 24. Whom God raised from the dead, of which we are witnesses, he said in chapter 3 and verse 15. Whom God raised from the dead, we cannot but speak the things which we have seen and heard, he said in chapter 4. And here in chapter 5, verses 31 and 32. Him, God has exalted him to the right hand, and we are witnesses of these things. These men claimed to have actually seen Jesus alive. Believe it or not, they made that claim. It's a historical fact that these men taught that they had witnessed the resurrection of Jesus of Nazareth. The truth of their testimony is the only adequate explanation for why these men changed their attitudes and gave their lives for the spread of the good news that there is, after all, life after death. And Jesus is its author. If this was a lie, if what they're testifying was a lie, why do the accounts of their behavior prior to the resurrection reflect so poorly on them? I mean, if you're concocting a lie, this is all going to be fiction, why would you write about your cowardly behavior at the time of the resurrection? I mean, at the time of the arrest and crucifixion. Why would you do that? If this was a lie, why do the accounts of their behavior prior to the resurrection look so bad? And what did they expect to gain from it? And why? Why in the world did they die for it? And then, in Acts chapter 5, in verse 33, we talked about this in our Bible class. You've got Gamaliel speaking. Take heed to yourselves what you intend to do regarding these men, these disciples of Jesus. Some time ago, Theudas rose up claiming to be somebody. A number of men, about 400, joined him. He was slain, and all who obeyed him were scattered and came to nothing. After this, Judas of Galilee rose up in the days of the census and drew away many people after him. He also perished, and all who obeyed him were dispersed. These were false messiahs claiming that. And now I say to you, keep away from these men and let them alone. For if this plan or this work is of men, it will come to nothing. But if it is of God, you cannot overthrow it, lest you be found to fight against God. My question is that we have to ask ourselves is, who's Thutis and who's Judas of Galilee? Tell me about them. Well, you know nothing about them. Why? Because they were frauds. And that's what happens to frauds. Generally speaking, even if they're known in history, there's no movement. There's no followers any longer of them. Who's Jesus Christ? We all know, don't we? We all know about this person of history. He's not obscure. How'd that happen? No, this was not some plan of men. It was the plan of God, and entirely futile to fight against, according to Gamaliel. Only one thing adequately explains why all of these men who had fled from Jesus while he lived would now rejoice in the opportunity to suffer for him after he died. And that is, he's not dead. He lives. He lives. And so let me close with this. In John chapter 2. In John chapter 2 and verse 18. So the Jews answered and said to him, "What sign do you show us since you do these things?" Jesus answered and said to them, "Destroy this temple and in 3 days I will raise it up." And the Jews said, "It has taken 46 years to build this temple, and will you raise it up in 3 days?" But he was speaking of the temple of his body. Therefore, when he had risen from the dead, his disciples remembered that he had said this to them, and they believed the scripture and the word which Jesus had said. They believed the scripture and the word which Jesus had said. And the question is, do you? We've looked only at the historical claims of the earliest Christians. The record is sound evidence that the first Christians were not just people with a different worldview and philosophy. The first Christians were who they were because they had seen the risen Lord, or had heard the testimony of those who had seen the risen Lord. A resurrected Jesus means that everything he taught was true. And what does that mean for us? What does that mean for you? Follow Jesus. Submit to Jesus. Live in Jesus. Overcome death in Jesus. Believe in the resurrection of Jesus from the dead. There's good historical reason to do that.